Welcome to the Building with Metal podcast, presented by McElroy Metal. Whether you're a contractor, architect, designer, or building owner, we're here to help you build better with metal roofing and siding products.
In this episode of Building with Metal, McElroy Metal's Charlie Smith shares practical insights on how to safely increase the load capacity of existing buildings. From engineering considerations and framing techniques to panel selection and recover strategies, Charlie explains how to balance performance, safety, and cost while modifying existing structures. Welcome to the show, Charlie.
Thank you, Kathy. I appreciate you inviting me in here.
Yeah, we're excited to pick your brain a little bit today. Before we get started, though, in case our listeners aren't familiar with you, although I think everybody knows Charlie, but in case somebody doesn't know you, can you give us a little bit of a primer on your background and what you do for McElroy at this point?
I owned a regional metal roofing manufacturer in Texas for 23 years. And during that, I was kind of like Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi. And I got pretty good at putting new roofs on top of old roofs. And then I was, towards the end of my time owning that business, I started focusing my attention on the symmetrical standing seam panels instead of the traditional double lock standing seam panels. And I sold my business to McElroy Metal 13 years ago now. Kind of hard to believe it's been that long. And what I do here is I figure out how to put new roofs on top of old roofs, and I use symmetrical standing seams. That's, you know, I feel like there are better roof systems than the traditional panels for a lot of reasons.
So before we dive in, let's, in case our listeners aren't familiar with the term symmetrical standing seam, Charlie, can you fill us in?
Yeah, so a symmetrical standing seam is a T-shaped panel that is the same on both sides. It, you know, it's flat, it goes up, it turns in, and then it returns, and then it has a cap that joins the panels together. And where a traditional double lock or snap panel is a directional panel, it's got a male side and a female side, which has you installing the roof from right to left or left to right. And particularly with the mechanically seamed, let's call them asymmetrical panels or directional panels, you know, once they're installed, they're impossible to repair. Very, very difficult to get back apart because of the way the panel is seamed together with a mechanical seamer. And so, you know, for me is, you know, you've got this, you know, U.S. Steel and SDI have increased the warranty on Galvalume to 50 years if it's got paint on it. U.S. Steel is telling you that they're expecting, you know, 60, 70 years of life expectancy out of the roof system. It would be nice if you could make a simple repair to it. And that's what the symmetrical panels do, is they give you the ability to remove individual panels out of the field of the roof after they're installed, which to me is an enormous deal.
So, absolutely. Especially, like you said, when you start talking a roof lasting 60 years, you know, the chances of some sort of modification or addition to be made during the building life is pretty...
All kind of things happen, man.
Absolutely. So is that the only benefit really to a symmetrical panel?
Well, no. I mean, they get much better wind uplift capacity. They're easier. You know, once someone gets used to installing them, we find that people that we work with, they pretty much abandon ship on the double lock panels because of the fact that they're, once you get used to them, they give you a lot more flexibility in the installation. You can start where you want to, you can skip curbs, you can have your pros working on curb flashing while everybody else is sheeting the roof. So there's so many installation advantages, but the main thing is, you know, most important thing is the fact that, you know, at the end of the construction and the plumber has punched a hole in the wrong place or the bricklayer has sprayed acid all over your brand new roof, that, you know, it's very simple to replace three panels here and two panels there and have yourself a brand new building instead of one area of the building that's, you know, got a huge problem that's impossible to repair.
Well, we're just getting started and we already had our first squirrel, so we better get back on topic here. So, so let's start, I guess, at the beginning. You know, why do you find that it's sometimes necessary to add load capacity to existing buildings?
So there's two types of buildings that, you know, that need to be, that are, that, that are candidates for recover, putting a new roof on top of the existing roof. So that's, you know, the main thing that we're dealing with is you got an existing building, it's got a roof that's not performing, and it's either traditional construction, where you've got a steel deck on top of bar joists that has a roof on it, and generally we're talking about an existing sloped roof here. Or you've got an existing metal building that's got open purlins as the structure, and the roof is attached. The existing roof that's not performing is attached to the existing to open purlins. And so, what you find most of the times, the buildings that have a solid deck have enough capacity to put a new roof. A new roof on a building with a solid deck is going to be going to weigh, you know, way less than 3 pounds per square foot, or let's just say it's one and a half to two pounds per square foot. And the building code allows you, international existing building code allows you to add up to 3 pounds per square foot, or, you know, 5% increase in the load on an existing building. That's what, you know, they've given you this cushion. But what we find is that a lot of buildings don't have 3 pounds, especially metal buildings. And so an owner might hire a structural engineer to come in and evaluate his building. And what they find is that they don't have the capacity for a new roof, or there's a wind load capacity issue that the existing building won't meet the current wind load. So if you put a new roof on, it's got to meet the wind load, and it's got to meet, you know, it's got to be a sound structure. So if there's some kind of an issue with the structure, and the issue is identified that there's not enough existing capacity within the structure for the new roof, then capacity has to be added, or you got to take the old roof off and put the new roof on. This weighs the same amount. So a lot of cases, you just don't, you know, they don't have. They don't want the building opened up, right?
Right.
So they want to recover. So you got to figure out how to get there on top of the roof.
Right. Okay. So is it always that due to building code changes from the time, like when the building was originally built till today, or are there times maybe, you know, the building isn't structurally sound for another reason?
Well, it's not, you know, it's both, right? So the building codes continue to change, and a building that was built in 1975 is not going to meet the current wind and snow loads and gravity loads. So you have to, the new roof that goes on has to meet the current snow and gravity. I mean, snow and wind loads, let's say gravity and wind loads. And so you have to, you know, demonstrate, you know, with engineering that your new roof, the attachment of your new roof to the existing structure is going to meet the wind loads, and or the attachment of the new roof to the existing structure is going to meet the snow load. So now the existing structure is, you know, really needs to be looked at by a qualified engineer if there's any concern about it.
That he gotcha. Can. I was just going to ask about
what
that.
The
okay.
capacity is, right?
Okay. And so that's really step one then for a building owner or contractor, is to engage with a local engineer?
I think if you're, you know, concerned about weight, so the code gives you 3 pounds. Most buildings are good, but not all are. So if there's any concern at all, get a structural engineer in there to make an analysis of the building to make sure that there's capacity there for the additional weight. And so particularly in a metal building, you've got two components. You've got the purlins you've got the rigid frame, which is the frame, the main frame that's holding the building up. And then you've got the purlins that go across and are attached to the rigid frames that the roof is attached. Roof is attached to. So you've got two components that are, you know, in a metal building that are, the part of the structure that need to be looked at.
Okay. And so can you walk us through some of the most common approaches that you use when you face situations where you need to increase the structural strength on a metal building?
Yeah. So on a metal building, if it's a gravity load issue or a snow load issue, and it's determined that the existing purlins are not purlins or the structure are not strong enough, then you have to add structure. There's no getting, you know, you have to add structure. So that would be either you take the roof off and add purlins, or you add purlins from the inside, or you can do a retrofit on top of the roof that will add strength as well. So it's either add purlins from the inside, remove the replacement roof and add purlins. If the rafters or the rigid frames are inadequate, then there's ways to beef them up, and it generally requires some, you know, welding and adding some structure underneath there that makes the existing rafters stronger. Right.
Well, it sounds like of all of those options, the one going on top of the roof would be the home run, right?
Exactly. The one that goes on top is the home run. And so as far as wind loading goes, wind loading is the same thing. You have to either add structure, you have to add purlins inside the building to provide more attachment points for the new roof, or you can use a roof system that meets the wind uplift attached to the existing purlin spacing. So it's about the number of clips that are attached, you know, a number of attachment points. So I particularly like to use a symmetrical standing seam because the symmetrical panels have continuous clips that allow us to increase the load carrying capacity of the roof system attached to the existing purlin spacing. So you can do that without adding additional framing on the inside, or, you know, an alternate method if you're going to retrofit and it's a wind loading issue, then you can do a grid on top of the roof as well, so that instead of lining up your framing on top of the existing purlins, then you have to run framing that goes up and down and attaches to the existing purlins. So it's up and down between the existing roof panels, attached through the old roof into the purlins, and then you go across with a new frame spacing that's tighter than the existing frame spacing, so that you got more attachment points. So you can, you know, there's a number of you. So we call that a grid system on top of the existing roof, and that can be added for snow or for wind, but 90% of the time is because of wind to meet the wind loading on the existing roof.
And so, let's put a building owner hat on. What are the big advantages for me if I can take and avoid a tear off?
Oh, it's a huge deal, you know. So it's the interruption to the occupant, you know. So if you've got an ongoing business inside and now you've got to open up the roof on a metal building to add purlins or put a new roof on, it's an enormous disruption. So that's the main reason. The other reasons are is that if you take the roof off on a metal building or on a normal roof, you have to meet the current energy code, which in most places is probably R30. So if it's a metal building, now you're talking about coming back with 9.5 inches of bad insulation. And a lot of metal buildings don't have room because they've got all this stuff in between the purlins all right now. So it's very difficult to add 9.5 inches of bad insulation into an existing metal building. Or if you're using rigid insulation, you're talking about 5.2 inches of polyiso if you're doing a remove and replace, which is a significant amount of insulation. So and then polyiso has to be installed on top of a liner panel. So if you want to do a remove and replace on a metal building, then you have to bring it up to your energy code using either a liner panel and polyiso or bat insulation is going to be at least 9.5 inches.
And so those are huge, right? By the time you figure moving inventory or ceasing operations, then now you're doing energy code and maybe it's a cold storage building, right? And you don't even care about insulation, right? But your hand is forced, right? As soon as you tear that roof off,
exactly.
You have to do that.
The other thing is real important is that if this is a metal building and it has an exposed fastener panel as the current roof, That roof, you have to assume that that roof is holding the building square. And so it's part of the integral part of the structure. So you can't just remove an exposed fastener roof and put a free-floating standing seam on there. I mean, you're liable to have a huge problem. So
that's a great point.
I mean, it's an enormous issue. So I catch that on, you know, at least once a month, you know, we're having this conversation with somebody. They just want to do, or we want a new roof on this building. It's, you know, it's leaking and take the old roof off and put a new, you know, I want one of those standing seam roofs. Well, great, you know, but now you're going to have to add an enormous amount of bracing in between the purlins to stabilize the purlins and keep the building from imploding on itself. So you're always better off, in my opinion, if the existing roof is a existing screw down panel that's an integral part of the structure, just to leave that in place and then retrofit, put a new roof on top of it.
And that's a really great point. I mean, I didn't realize for, you know, a long time in the industry that a building is designed for the specific wall or roof panels, and it does affect it. So you're right. You know, it's not a cookie cutter where you can just take one on and put the other one on. So
exactly.
One of the other benefits we haven't touched on as well, and it's certainly a little smaller, but that's worker safety during install, right? Can you talk to that for a moment?
Huge deal. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 30-foot eave height, somebody falling through the hole in the roof you just created. This, I mean, it's certain death, right? But now if you're leaving the existing roof in place, nobody's falling on anything. You just got to make sure there's no skylights or anything in there. So this safety deal is an enormous deal. And then it makes the job go a lot faster as well when you're working on a solid deck. And then the other side of this is that, you know, we're doing site form panels. If the panels are too long to ship, we come out there and make them on this job site. And so if you've got a 200-foot run from eave to ridge and we're doing a 2-foot wide panel, that's 400 square feet for every panel that goes down. So it's, you know, you're talking about a much faster, much safer installation and much more watertight installation if you're removing all the lap joints out of the roof system.
So what is, when you think about a strategy to strengthen older buildings, what's the most effective or your favorite? And kind of explain to us what it is and why, if you will.
And I'm going to tell you, this is like the biggest deal that's come out in a very long time. And this is, we're looking at a, and we're talking about a metal building here. We're not talking about a job where we're, you know, going over an existing existing roof that's on a steel deck or a plywood deck. We're talking about on a metal building that's installed on open purlins. There are probably four or five different ways to effectively put a new roof on an existing metal building. And they weigh anywhere from, you know, 1.5 pounds per square foot to, let's say, 3 pounds, okay? The most important one, the most valuable one, the most, you know, the one that does the best job is the roof hugger. The roof hugger's, it's been around for, you know, 20-something years now. And it's basically what it is, it's a Z-purlin that's notched out of the bottom and up the web to fit over the ribs of the existing roof panel. And so, and when you attach this through the roof into the old purlin, we got a great picture here that shows, you know, the roof hugger installed on a trapezoidal standing seam. Okay, so this is really simple. It's a simple idea and it's very effective. And so what we've known for a long time is that, you know, you could get up on a building and you're like walking around on a trampoline before the roof hugger is installed. And then after the roof hugger is installed, then the new roof is completely different. So what that indicates is that the roof hugger stiffened the purlins. And you look at it, it's just logic. You know, you've got an 8-inch Z purlin inside the building that's holding the roof up. And now you're putting another 4-inch tall Z purlin on top of that purlin. Well, you're just making that purlin taller and making it stronger. So about, I don't know, it seemed like about 5-6 years ago, roof hugger decided to go ahead and try to quantify these numbers. Okay. So they spent an enormous amount of money doing base testing. And a base test is where you install a roof on top of a purlin and pull down on the purlin until the purlin fails. And so they did a special base test because normally a base test is just a purlin supported on both ends in a simple span condition. The problem is the purlin doesn't fail in the middle in real life. It fails where it's lapped over the top of the purlin. I mean, over the top of the rafter. So they did a special test with like 50-foot run where they had two 25-foot bays with a purlin lap in the middle and then installed the roof on top of that and then pulled down until the purlins failed. And then did this 46 times until they were able to test basically every conceivable purlin height and gauge along with different height and gauge roof hugger so that they could get a really good idea of what the roof hugger did for them. And then they had a very well-known a structural engineer named Chris Moen. He wrote a modeling software program for them that is able to predict the effect of the roof hugger on the building. And so what we're finding is that the roof hugger in a normal condition, and I'm talking about a normal condition, this is over a screw down roof panel or a low floating standing seam. And so here's a picture of some different standing seams that are high floating or low floating. And it's real important. This is the most important thing that if you're going to look at a building is to understand it, and it's an existing standing seam, is you need to understand how high the existing metal roof is floating above the purlin. So if it's a low floating system, which is the one in the middle here in this picture, then you're pulling the panel, the existing roof down flat on top of the purlin, and you're going to gain the structural enhancement of the roof hugger. So when we're seeing unbelievable numbers out of adding a roof hugger on top of an existing purlin, and it's so we've been using this and refocusing our attention. At least I'm refocusing my attention on this idea of doing structural enhancement while I'm putting a new roof on this building. And then you're taking a building that was built in 1975, and now you're making it a lot stronger. So I really like that idea, and that's really the direction that I'm looking at most of the jobs that I do right now, is to incorporate the roof hugger strategy to fortify the structure while we're putting a new roof on. And then the last part of this is that the high floating standing seams roof systems, you cannot pull the roof hugger down flat onto the existing purlin because you're an inch above or an inch and a half above the purlin where the bottom of the roof panel is. So you can't pull them down where they're in direct contact with each other. So in those systems, you've always just been adding weight. And about a year or so ago, we determined that if we could put a sleeve in between the bottom of the roof hugger and the top of the purlin where the fastener connects them to, that the roof hugger would sit on top of this sleeve and the sleeve would sit on top of the purlin, and that would give us a direct connection back to the purlin. And Chris Moen spent 4 months rewriting his modeling program and came up with, that we're adding, like 3 to 5 pounds per square foot of capacity on a purlin using these sleeves. And without the sleeve where we're sitting flat down on the purlin, we're seeing anywhere from 5 to 12 to 15 pounds per square foot of additional capacity added.
So that's amazing.
It's absolutely astounding.
And, right. Well, so, you've mentioned a couple times the importance, Charlie, of figuring out if you have a low floating system or utility or a high. And, can you walk our listeners through specifically how they might do that?
Yeah. So number one, you get on a standing seam roof and you're a contractor and you want to talk about doing a recover, or you're a roof consultant or an architect. The number one, this is not something you let somebody else figure out. Something you need to figure out first while you're there is this a high floating or a low floating standing seam? So the best way to do it is from the inside where you can get up. So you got to get up, in some type of basket or whatever to the bottom of the roof on the downhill side of a purlin. Because the purlin's going to be facing uphill, and that way you're looking at the back of the Z purlin going up and going away from you. And then you pull the insulation apart. If there's bad insulation, you get the insulation apart. And then you may see a thermal spacer, a white piece of styrofoam in there. So a low floating, and then you just want to measure the back of the purlin to the top, to the bottom of the roof panel. It's just this distance. And so that distance is either going to be zero, which would be, which means it's installed with a utility clip that's holding it flat down. It may be 3/8 of an inch. 3/8 of an inch is a low floating system and generally designed for buildings that have 3 inches of bad insulation. And then you get into a high floating system after that, which will be 1 inch, 1 3/8, or 1 5/8. Those are the ones that I know, right? And so, and those will have a big thick piece of styrofoam most of the time between the bottom of the roof panel and the purlin. So so that's the best way to do it. But if you can't get to the access to the bottom, the best thing to do is go up real close to the ridge and locate a purlin with your foot, make sure that you're standing on the purlin, and then get right over next to the seam within about this far of the seam, the standing seam, and drill a hole through the panel right over the purlin, and then bounce the drill bit off of the purlin and then pull it out and see how far it goes in before it hits the purlin. But you want to do it close to the seam. If you do it in the middle, you don't know you're going to be a lot of places for the roof to go. So you want to go as close as the seam that you can. And if you're thinking male, female side, you want to do it on the male side of the panel so that you're not putting this fastener through and landing on top of the clip that's holding the roof panel down. I've seen that happen, you know. So,
right.
But that's the best way if you got to do it from the outside.
Okay, yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Then fill the hole with some goop and get on down the road.
Right. Okay. So, you know, you have done a lot of recovers for our clients over the last 13 years. And, of course, even before that, your entire career. So, you know, if you had to think of one that stands out to you that was just, you were really proud of, that you were able to really change the structural integrity of the building, can you tell us about that? Your favorite standout?
No, I mean, we had a job in Pennsylvania that was, you know, it was some type of armament, you know, it was a military armament company where they were, you know, running 24/7, had no tolerance for shutdown. And so they wanted the fastest, you know, they wanted a roof and they wanted it now. So I proposed a tall clip recover, which is the fastest, easiest, cheapest way to put a roof on. And so the proposal was, this was an existing roof, was an R panel, which is a 12-inch on center exposed fastener roof panel. And so we're going to run a 24-inch wide, a new Trap T standing seam roof, which is my flagship now, trapezoidal shape, symmetrical panel that we just came out with for doing recover exactly like this on a rectangular building. And we priced this thing out. And so the new panel clips line up between the ribs of the old panel, and then they're attached through to the strut, to the purlins below. And then they hold the new roof up above the ribs of the old roof. So it's super fast, super easy. We got the price, and they were great with it, but they needed to have an engineer come in and look at the structure. And so, you know, a month later, they came back with this engineer's report, and they said, you know, this building is so overstressed that you can't even get on this thing. So we don't want anybody on this building. It's dangerous. So you're going to have to tear off the old roof and add a purlin in between every purlin on this building because the purlins are so overstressed. And plus the rigid frame had issues as well, but the purlins were so overstressed. And now we're talking about, it was like 95 feet from the eave to the ridge. So now we're talking about a 27-foot wide hole, 90 foot deep in an ongoing military armament plant. They had zero tolerance for any shutdown because they're running 24/7, and that's just an impossible situation. So I suggested, we got on a call about it with the engineer. I suggested that maybe we should get Roofauger involved, that they can probably help us. And so that what that required was that the engineer go inside the building and measure the purlins and come. You know, we had to have all the dimensions. So basically, what Roofauger's engineer needs is the dimensions of the purlin and the cage, all the dimensions. Then you need to measure at the lap over the rafter how long the lap is. You need to understand what the lap is. And then you need to have, and this information in the field of the building, as well as the first bay in, the first joint where the first purlin comes in from the gable. You need to have that separately. And then you need to know how the purlin is connected to the top of the rafter. Is it attached to a clip, an angle clip that's welded to the beam? Is there an angle clip that's screwed to the beam? Is there just a flange bolt where they just screw through the bottom of the purlin? So you need to know all that information. You fill out the form, you send it in to Roof Hugger's engineer, and then he comes back with an analysis, you know, a couple of weeks later. So on that, we were able to determine that by adding a roof hugger that was a certain height, that we could add 8 pounds per square foot of additional capacity. And that solved their problem. So a roof hugger for an R panel is 1.83 inches tall. Okay, that's the normal roof hugger height for an R panel. And what they've determined it with doing all this testing is the maximum increase in load carrying capacity is at 4.5 inches. So that you can, and anything over 4.5 inches, the it diminishes. Anything under 4.5 inch tall roof hugger is less. So 4.5 inches is the magic number. They figured out that with 2.5 inches, we got them in the clear. We didn't need a 4.5 inch tall, but 2.5 got them where they needed to go. And so we went from a tall clip recover to a 2.5 inch roof hugger that was infilled with polyiso insulation with ice and water shield on it. So now we're able to add a second layer of waterproofing underneath the roof with pretty much zero interruption to the occupant. So it was that was really my favorite.
That's a huge win.
It was a huge win. And there's probably 50 more that have similar stories that we've done. So.
Right. Right. Well, one other thing, we're kind of getting to where we need to wrap up, Charlie, okay. But real quick before we do, you mentioned the tall clip recover, and while it wasn't the solution you were able to use in the job you just discussed, it is a solution in a lot of jobs, right? And you mentioned that it's the lowest cost entry point for a recover, right? You know, one of the other options people often consider, you know, is an EPDM, right? Recover as opposed to going in with metal. And, you know, so can you give us an idea of like how a tall clip recover would cost compare out to that?
It's going to still be a little bit more, but, you know, I think one thing that a lot of people don't understand, and this is really where this weight issue comes in, is that a metal building is designed for a metal roof. It's not designed for a smooth surface roof, right? A smooth surface roof is not, the metal building is not intended for that. It's intended for a roof that channelizes the water and provides equal loading across the entire structure. Okay. So, and you get equal loading because the water stays in this channel, right? So once you put a smooth surface roof on there, then you lose control of the water flow. And so what happens on a metal building is that you put a smooth surface roof on it, the water runs mid-span of the purlins as it's going downhill. So, and 99.9% is not a problem. But what we've seen, especially this is, we've seen a number of buildings that have collapsed as a result of doing this. And it's not the fact that the water's running down the middle of the purlins. It's most of these have been on jobs that have interior gutter at a parapet wall, which is, you know, a design where they, you know, this is the look that you want. You don't want to see the roof. And so what they're doing is instead of they infill the gutter and then they put a scuppers out of the wall to get the water flow going out of the wall instead of into this internal gutter that may be leaking, causing problems. And so when that happens, then they're backing water up onto the roof to let the water flow out. And so now, you know, for the best flow out of a scupper, you need like 3-inch water head for it to flow. Well, 3 inches of water on a 1/4-on-12 slope at the first purlin, which is 5 feet up, that's putting 15 pounds per square foot on the first purlin that we've already seen that a lot of these buildings that don't even have 3 pounds, right? So now you're deflecting this purlin way down, and that's what's caused a number of these buildings is to collapse, is just overloading them with water, because they're not designed to have that much weight on them.
Right. So you're, you know, as we talked earlier, it's important to remember how the building is designed, right? When you select a roof. So you've got an incorrect application there, but you also have a situation where you have a complete difference in life expectancy, right? I mean, what can you expect out of an EPDM these days? Are we 20?
Well, it's just any of these single plies, you know, you're going to get, you get a 20, you can get a 20 year warranty on them, and they're not bad roofs. They're just bad application on the, they're roofs that are put on the wrong structure. The structure is not designed for it. And most people don't think of it that way. They just think, oh yeah, we're just going to put this up here with that. Nobody looks on the inside. They don't look at this 3-pound number. And the kind of alarming thing to me is that I'm seeing more and more owners have somebody go in and look at the building to really look at the structure. And more than, you know, I'd say at least 50% of the time, there's not 3 pounds there. Doesn't even have the capacity. And I don't know if that's really conservative engineering or if that's just the fact, you know. But so I would say that, you know, like this tall clip recover is like 1.5 pounds.
Exactly. And then, you know, you pick up a life expectancy 3 times what you were going to do, right, know, on the membranes. So big, big differences. All right. Well, before we wrap up, if you could give an owner considering a recover or a tear off any piece of advice as they start, you know, into the process, what would it be?
I would say that, you know, number one is understand what your options are and don't just automatically think that remove and replace is the only option, because recover can be a great option as long as, you know, certain parameters are followed and, you know, you have someone helping you be logical about the process. So there's some great options out there to give you a really long lasting solution. You got to have a great system. You got to have a great design and you got to have a great contractor. So, I mean, the contract in the end is really about having a great contractor doing the work. And that's going to get you the lifespan that you're looking for, because if you you're a long-term owner, then a metal roof is probably going to be the best way for you.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us today, Charlie. If our listeners want to reach out to you directly to talk about a project, what's the best way for them to find you?
They can find me. My email address is probably the best thing. And my email address is clsmith@mcelroymetal.com.
That's C.L. Smith, Charlie L. Smith at McElroyMetal.com. Perfect.
Correct.
We'll put that up on the screen as well for folks to find it. So thanks so much for joining us today, Charlie.
Great. Thank you, Kathy, for having me, okay? Appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Building with Metal podcast, presented by McElroy Metal. To stay up to date with our latest episodes, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us online at www.mcelroymetal.com for more info and products. Until next time, keep building with metal.